Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024, the 1168th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. So let's get started where we left off in yesterday's episode. And of course, that's a really lame day later April Fool's joke because there was no episode yesterday. But I do hope you had a great weekend, a great holiday weekend. If you are a Christian and celebrate Easter, I understand that is very controversial now. Now, I used to be an atheist, as I have said many times. I spent most of my adult life as an atheist. So I am one of those people who did not care at all about religious holidays and in fact mocked the ideas behind them because what I witnessed was a society not really caring a whole lot about the beliefs they professed for themselves. The philosopher Daniel Dennett used to talk about how rather than believing in God, most people who profess a belief in God really have a belief in God. They believe it is a good thing to believe in God, so they will profess belief in God, whether or not they actually believe in God. And Daniel Dennett believed that he could discern this based on the fact that a lot of people who professed a belief in God certainly didn't act as though they actually believed what they said they believed. And that was always very compelling to me because that's what aligned with my observations. That is how I saw people acting. And granted, my observations began in a quote unquote elite liberal arts college and then in Hollywood, California. So those aren't the best environments to find out what it is that American Christians actually believe. It would be like taking your understanding of what the NFL is all about from Taylor Swift's fan base of teenage girls. They can say they're into the NFL and they like football, but really they're just there to observe gossip about their idol in real time. Now, once you adopt the view that Christians don't really believe in all the things they say they believe in, and there are a great many casual quote-unquote observers out there who don't take their beliefs very seriously. They identify culturally as Christians, but don't really practice. Once you've decided that they don't really believe the right things as an outsider to the religion, well, then you get to ascribe all sorts of other motivations to them. And we've seen that over the last 10 days, directed, of course, at Donald Trump and MAGA. Donald Trump has made some statements on Truth Social, some videos about Jesus Christ, about Easter, and that's caused a great deal of controversy. Last week, Andrew Klavan at the world's leading producer of trans content, Daily Wire, where they publish trans content 24/7, he had the genius observation that people online saying Christ is king were actually doing so from anti-Semitic motivations. It was an anti-Semitic dog whistle, as he calls it, very much adopting the language of the woke left in order to go after Trump supporters and the America First movement for having a belief about their religion that conflicts with or diminishes the Jewish faith. And I'm not exactly sure what else could ever be done about that. Different religions have different beliefs. If you have different beliefs, you are therefore essentially saying, hey, I believe your religion is wrong. I believe your God is false. That's just kind of how it works. Is it divisive? Maybe. But that's just sort of how it goes when one set of beliefs is mutually exclusive from another set of beliefs. The Western Journal put out a piece about this last week, theorizing that maybe the motivation for Klavan's comments was the departure of Candace Owens from the Daily Wire. She and Ben Shapiro were having some sort of spat because Candace Owens, I guess, was not producing the required amount of trans content to remain on the Daily Wire. Or maybe she was just anti-Semitic because she didn't say all the right things, according to Ben Shapiro. Klavan, in a video on the Daily Wire network, said, when you use that phrase to mean that God has abandoned his chosen people, the Jews, through whom he came into this world incarnate, and that he's broken his promise, his covenant with the Jews, you are quoting scripture like Satan does in the Bible. He called it wicked when people use that phrase. And this, of course, generated a great deal of controversy. And we have to think about the context of these comments because since last fall, since the paragliding go-kart incident, we have been told that any criticism of Israel and what we are told they are doing in Gaza is anti-Semitism, which makes it impossible to assess or critique or even condemn the actions of what we are told is a foreign government and foreign military in response to an event that happened nearly 6 months ago, whose details are murky at best, but nonetheless a justification for a six-month-long war, quote-unquote, where supporters of the Zionist project in Israel cheered on the idea that Israel might glass the desert, that they were justified in doing whatever they wanted in response because of how bad Israel's 9/11 on 10/7 was. So this generated a lot of back and forth on X, formerly Twitter. And we have seen Con Inc. activate in exactly the ways you would expect. Jason Whitlock from The Blaze, formerly of ESPN, questioned how the phrase Christ is King was anti-Semitic, and Jenna Ellis, who was the attorney working alongside Rudy Giuliani in the post-2020 election period, supposedly going after election fraud, but then became a big Ron DeSantis supporter and also one of the people who took a plea in the Fannie Willis RICO prosecution that is imploding more and more each day. And she wrote, that's like asking how the phrase Black Lives Matter doesn't really mean that Black Lives Matter, or the problem with the term social justice or Christian nationalism. These are all phrases designed to signal. And of course, Black Lives Matter absolutely is a propagandistic slogan designed to signal that is detached from the actual principle those words would suggest. She went on, of course, Christ is King, but the phrase Christ is King is used to describe an anti-Israel sentiment and false theology that God abandoned the Jews and Christians are the new chosen people. Whitlock responded, Black Lives Matter, social justice, and Christian nationalism are not biblically based phrases. Jesus is proclaimed as the King of Kings in the Bible. The foundation of Christ is King is taken directly from the Bible. And he thanked Jenna Ellis for responding. But what you can see is a clear divide emerging once again between Con Inc. and MAGA, where the Con Inc. contingent is figuring out different ways to direct the uniparty regime and its hate movement toward Trump and his supporters, while themselves pretending to be the responsible ones, the victims, the ones who are actually feeling the intense and even borderline violent backlash from MAGA. And these were the same people who spent all of last fall getting various academics canceled because they supported pro-Palestinian efforts on their campus. And to be clear, I am not pro-Palestine. I am not pro-Hamas. I'm not defending Hamas. I think all of these terrorist organizations, as well as all of these regime-controlled and infiltrated governments, especially in their proxy states, they're all elements of the same global regime. And when they have conflicts, those conflicts are controlled from high levels, and they happen to destabilize societies and push the global regime's agenda forward no matter the cost. And that is what I believe we're seeing in Israel and Gaza right now. It is in no way an insult to the Jewish people or the people of the land geographically demarcated as Israel now. It's simply a statement about the state of the world. I don't think of the situation in Israel any differently than I think of the situation in Ukraine or the situation in Taiwan. And the truth is that the global regime and its uniparty representation in the United States, they don't think of it any differently either, which is why they constantly combine those three funding priorities, demanding money for all of them, despite the fact that the American people don't support any of these efforts. It's just one of those things we don't have a choice about, because the people who have already usurped this nation, they are going to get their way one way or the other. This statement is not even about Jews, though it might be about people who represent themselves to be Jews without being Jews. See how easy that is? They say that about Christians, but if you say it the other way around, even though there is a whole class of people who consider themselves secular Jewish people, Bernie Sanders is a Jewish atheist, for instance. How could it be anti-Jewish to a secular or atheistic Jewish person to have a disagreement about religious doctrine? Maybe Jenna Ellis is right that that is a proper reading of the Bible, but maybe she's not right. And if she's not right, and the other people are right, then it's not anti-Semitic for them to say it. It is just a professing of their sincerely held religious belief based on their understanding of Scripture. And what we immediately see emerge is Con Inc. doing the exact same thing to Donald Trump supporters that they did with left-wing academics last fall. They see an attack point, they call MAGA anti-Semitic, and off we go. They are under attack again. Christianity, by the way, definitely not under attack in America during the Joe Biden fake presidential administration, anti-woke crusader James Lindsay, who has done some genuinely good work over the last few years, pointing out aspects of Marxism and leftism, talking about the woke social justice initiatives that are included in the global regime agenda, whether it's the trans stuff, the race stuff, ESG, DEI, etc. One of his pet projects over the last year or so is constantly worrying about, or perhaps concern trolling, over the ideas of Christian nationalism, as if this is some massive movement that everyone is involved in, and that this is going to sink the right. Oh, the right, quote unquote. They have all these advantages against Joe Biden, and Trump's supporters are going to blow it because they're all about their Christian nationalism, and they are going to turn off too many quote unquote voters. Well, hey, James, what about the fact that Joe Biden didn't actually receive 81 million real lawful American votes, and people like you didn't really put your shoulder to the wheel on trying to publicize that and make sure that people know, make sure that we have election integrity, that something is actually done about that problem? Because if you don't do anything about that problem, it really doesn't matter what the electorate believes this November. The winners will be decided. What James Lindsay is doing is actually making an argument for why the global regime and its uniparty representation in the United States might actually win, because this group of Trump supporters has turned off everyone else to the point where they will go out and actually cast their real lawful American vote for Joe Biden, and he'll have so many of those that he and the quote-unquote left will win. James doesn't seem to understand the uniparty, or perhaps he just doesn't understand the resurgence of what people often call Christ consciousness, or the presence of outspoken Christians online in the political conversation. The left empowers members of the Muslim faith. The uniparty on both sides has long been willing to do absolutely whatever the regime proxy state in Israel and the Zionist project demand, ostensibly in support of believers in the Jewish faith or people who are said to be ethnically Jewish, whatever it is that means. And of course, all of the people who have right of return citizenship in Israel, if they decide that shit has hit the fan as members of the American government. But no one is ever really trying to support and empower Christians, because that would be unseemly. Christians are a majority. That means that they are powerful. They are, in fact, the oppressors, and these other religions, because they represent minorities, they are oppressed. Well, James Lindsay took a break from doing Joe Rogan podcasts and Daily Wire podcasts to begin expounding on this on Truth Social, where he is good enough to have joined us. He's put up a series of posts over the last few days, and I'll share some of those. He wrote, "I don't think the Muslims who are repeating Christ is King are doing it in earnest good faith either." He's referencing a post that Andrew Tate and other Muslims have made, supporting the fact that people are loudly and proudly proclaiming beliefs in their faith. Also, it is entirely possible that the people James Lindsay is so triggered by are simply online bots. He certainly believes the whole thing is an op. He just also believes that MAGA Christian nationalists are the ones getting caught up in it, and it is all real. It's all real people. It's not bots posting this and generating this content, attracting some small percentage of people acting in bad faith, who are then amplified and identified as the true representatives of this movement or people who support this particular phrase. He wrote in another post, "The bulk of the response to my pointing out that Christ is King is operational, like Black Lives Matter, proves my point. There's no denying it. At least half of it made otherwise pointless jabs at Jews, which was my point. It's being used not only as an article of Christian faith, but also as a jab at Jews. Talk to some Jews. They realize it in more cases than you might realize." Okay, so their feelings about what they're seeing online, that means that all of this actually is anti-Semitic. James Lindsay claims to be looking out for the good of the country, knowing that we can't withstand another 4 years of Joe Biden. And so he's decided that too many people are saying bad words online, and that means that real voters are going to go cast their votes for Joe Biden over Donald Trump out of being offended on behalf of Jewish people. They're going to see all of this talk online. They're going to see people saying Christ is king, and they're going to think, you know what? I better punish Donald Trump for this. Can't have people just saying that, upsetting Jewish people for some reason, I guess. I thought it was just okay to disagree with people about religious beliefs, but maybe not. He went on, 9 out of 10 struggle sessions I get put through online now come from quote-unquote right-wing fruit bats, not leftists. That's significant of something. Yeah, it's significant that you still think the problem is conspiracy theories and MAGA supporters online. He continued, Christ is King is, in addition to its malicious uses, a Christian virtue signal. Christians say it's true. Nobody else does. Repeating it shows you're on the team. Refusing to brings suspicions. That's why it works. Bad actors can abuse it, and lots will go along and defend it. It is insane to me how the very serious intellectuals gathered around the intellectual kids table on Twitter think that their little cloistered controversies of the day have a much bigger impact on the public conversation than they actually do. All sides of these conversations are virtue signals. James Lindsay is signaling to his very serious intellectual peers, all those responsible people. In the middle, you know, they're either a little center right or a little center left. They're just looking to make the right choice with their vote. That vote they care so much about that they don't even bother checking to see whether or not Joe Biden actually received 81 million real lawful American votes. Those people who are happy to go show up and vote again, or even better, just mail their ballot in. And when the TV tells them what actually happened outside, they'll say, yep, I agree. Thank you for telling me that, television. You've told me this is what was going to happen. I was mentally prepared for it. And here it is happening. Remember 2020? They knew that Donald Trump was going to be up on Election Day because all his voters would go vote for him in person on Election Day, despite the fact that all of Joe Biden's voters had been voting for over a month. But Trump was going to look like he had a red wave coming up. And then all those quote unquote late arriving mail-in ballots, those are going to come in. Those are going to win it for Biden. And when that's exactly what happened after they just stopped counting and then continue counting, of course, for days and days later, everyone was prepared to take that result seriously. So when the TV told them that's what happened, they said, hey, cool. The problem was Trump and all his supporters just offending too many people. Of course, 81 million people didn't go out and vote for Joe Biden. They went out and voted against Donald Trump. And because Donald Trump and his supporters are so awful, it's possible that 81 million people really did show up to do that. Now, yeah, Trump gains 12 million votes over his 2016 total, but there goes Joe Biden generating 27 million new voters and securing by far the most votes of all time. Yesterday, he posted on Truth Social, why do so many professing Christians hate Jews? What in the world is he talking about? He keeps claiming all of this is an op. You have to wonder if he's not intentionally trying to trigger people on Truth Social so that he can take the random responses from what might be bot accounts and then take those back to the intellectual kids table on Twitter and say, look what the dummies and the ignorant people are doing. It's also very strange. Why is this guy who's done nothing but focus on anti-wokeness for like a decade, still in 2024, just all anti-wokeness all the time? And by the way, I do understand that normies out there are still focused on wokeness. That is part of the problem. That is what people on the Daily Wire and people like James Lindsay funnel them into being focused on, because they control the public conversation on Twitter. and they produce countless hours of anti-woke content. That was meant to be the entire Ron DeSantis campaign. Ron DeSantis, Florida. That's where woke goes to die. And that was going to carry Ron DeSantis to the Republican nomination and then to victory over whoever the Democrats put up. Maybe Joe Biden, maybe someone else. Except no one really cared about that. People have bigger issues. They understand the woke thing. People have understood the woke thing for years. And people also understand that it's the Trump phenomenon that allowed that whole thing to be turned around. Because it's Trump supporters that were brave enough to go out online and say what they actually believed and tell the truth in the face of censorship and harassment, deplatforming, persecution, in some cases prosecution. The woke thing, when it is defeated, is not going to be defeated because academics told us what the intellectual history of the movement was. I'm not saying it's not important information. Again, I think the guy's done some good work. But anti-wokeness in 2024 is small potatoes. It is a diversion. Everyone should already have anti-wokeness in their back pocket and understand that one completely. We do not need to spend all of our time catering to normies and telling them the same thing over and over and over again. For years. How long have we been doing this for? People understand it. It just always creates popular viral content because it is such an easy target and such a low bar to cross. We do not need to keep celebrating people who tell us that they understand who has the wee-wees and who has the hoo-has. Congratulations. It is the most basic fact of human nature. It was confusing for a while there, but now we have all come back to our senses, and we can tell who has the wee-wees and who has the hoo-has. But nonetheless, it is the number one issue for quote-unquote right-wing content producers for years and years. And if you are in or adjacent to the quote-unquote right-wing mainstream, as James Lindsay is, and you are focused on anti-wokeness above election fraud or our pending financial collapse, you are the problem. You are the op. And this weekend, we got to see the other side of that controlled opposition dynamic when Joe Biden, quote unquote, put out a statement recognizing the Transgender Day of Visibility. And of course, we have to have a long conversation online about that too. Why? Because the people in this op have to let us know what the right position will be. It's definitely not our own natural reaction. It's what they say it is. They have to let us know the important facts. Like someone in Michigan thought of that day in 2009. They set it up all the way back then to be March 31st. Therefore, Joe Biden didn't choose the Transgender Day of Visibility, and he definitely didn't choose it to align with Easter. Okay, so what? So what? The fake president of the United States of America is putting out statements recognizing the Transgender Day of Visibility on Easter. But don't worry, they had another Easter egg hunt on the White House lawn, and Joe Biden welcomed the oyster bunnies and then sniffed some children and then got led away as he always does. All of that created a great opportunity to once again talk about how those Christian nationalists and those MAGA supporters were just so bad and mean and stupid. How could they even be upset at the fake president recognizing this date now that they know that Tranny Day has been on March 31st for 15 years? How dare they? James Lindsay followed up this morning, writing, encouraged by the number of Christians I know reaching out and replying that Jew hatred is absolutely not a Christian thing, despite many bad actors online. I fear the churches have some diligence ahead of them, though, in confronting this issue head on. It can't keep festering. So James Lindsay apparently agrees with Jenna Ellis's theological interpretation of Scripture, and now Lindsay believes it is the responsibility of the churches to correct this belief among their congregations. What would James Lindsay say if someone of his very high academic stature might suggest something similar about the Jewish faith, that the temples, the synagogues, they need to teach their congregations. I don't know if that's what it's called, so I'm not trying to say anti-Semitic things. The proper interpretation of their holy books. They can't have their own personal relationship with or understanding of the text. It has to be the proper understanding according to the very serious intellectuals. So Daily Wire kicked this Christ is King thing into high gear. You get very serious intellectuals who spend their time sitting around the intellectual kids table to make the case that the Daily Wire, that point of view is correct. Donald Trump supporters are indeed as dumb and dangerous as everyone has always said. And then after treating them the same way they treated commie academics last fall, the uniparty left side of the controlled opposition dynamic. The New York Times ran a major piece yesterday by a man named Michael C. Bender. The headline was "The Church of Trump: How He's Infusing Christianity into His Movement." And so Bender made a short video essentially explaining his argument, and I'm going to play that in just a second so that we don't have to go all the way through the article. Bender then went and appeared on Morning Joe, and between the two clips, you can essentially get the fullness of his argument in this article. So let's go ahead and listen to the audio of this piece of content he put out to accompany this article.
One of the more striking ways we see this impassioned loyalty from Trump fans is at the end of his rallies, where there's a sudden shift in tone, where it goes from very high energy into almost a solemn church-like atmosphere, where Trump gives a 10 to 15 minute sermon, preaching to his crowd, his faithful flock of supporters.
3 years ago, we were a great nation. And we will soon be a great nation again.
Initially, his supporters greeted this moment by holding up an index finger into the air, signaling QAnon, the movement of conspiracy theorists, even though the Trump campaign has distanced itself from that movement. In its place, what we see are people almost in prayer. The net effect here is Trump has turned the Republican Party into something resembling the Church of Trump. There are a couple of reasons why Trump is doing this. One is to deflect and distract from the 90-some charges he's facing. You know, he's portraying himself as a persecuted political martyr here, as someone who is being targeted because of his supporters' beliefs and not because of anything he's done wrong.
And in the end, they're not after me. They're after you. I just happen to be standing in the way, and I always will.
And another is a more nuts and bolts campaign effect. The Trump campaign can spend less money turning out these voters. These devotees will come out in mass to vote for him. While on the other hand, Democrats will try to use this against him, will try to use these images to make this seem cult-like in order to spook moderate voters back into their column.
Now, wait a second. That is what Michael Bender is doing. He's essentially arguing that Trump supporters, who he calls fans, are in a cult centered around Trump as a religious figure, and that's because Donald Trump has control over the minds of these people, and he presents himself as a religious figure. I think I'm being 100% fair in saying that that is his argument. That is the thrust of his argument. He mentions briefly the song that plays during that last segment of Trump's rally speeches. Trump talks about how the nation is in decline. It's not about presenting himself as a religious figure at all. They mentioned the one finger in the air for QAnon. Well, that one finger is certain Trump supporters recognizing the sentiment of where we go, one we go all. And if that upsets you, well, I'm sure they're very, very sorry for upsetting you. But it doesn't make them cultists, and it doesn't make them religious devotees of Donald Trump. So let's hear Michael Bender on Morning Joe.
Donald Trump rallies, and they have a certain religious fervor to them. They always have. But there is something notably different now. Tell me what you've observed.
Yeah, it's these like last 10 or 15 minutes of his rally. I mean, these rallies have long been known as for being raucous and volatile and off script. But now they change. Is a very big tone shift in these last few minutes for his finale. It gets very reverent, soft, reflective music plays throughout the arena, and he kind of recites this fairly tightly scripted, especially for former President Trump, a kind of political creed for his MAGA nation. And I grew up Catholic. It reminded me a little bit of the Nicene Creed we used to say in church. And but I've had other people describe this to me as no, this is an altar call at the end of a lot of Christian services. This kind of ambient music plays, and people come down and proclaim their faith and in their Lord and Savior. And Trump has really, this is how he's positioned himself in this third campaign. He is the, he is very careful not to call himself a Jesus figure, but he very much presents himself as the one true Republican leader. And we've seen this at multiple levels of the party, him replacing supporters at the Republican National Committee with people who are even more loyal to him, arm twisting in Congress to get people to back off endorsements or to back off legislation that might be harmful to his campaign. And among the rank and file level, this is how he does it. He's turned his rallies into a sort of aesthetic church-like experience, and supporters eat it up. I mean, they are at the end of the rallies, you'll see people kind of bow their heads, hold their arms close to their chest, and almost like they're praying along with him.
Using this religious language, his supporters reacting to him again as a religious figure. Is that siloing off these voters, or is it expanding the tent in this America, in America 2024, going into the election in November?
And she goes on with another guest, but that's how they're framing it. Trump is threatening his own success with this messaging. And so the mainstream media within the controlled opposition dynamic, they make sure to hit every single point. Donald Trump supporters are dumb. They are dangerous. They are potentially violent. They are in a cult. Donald Trump is the cause of this. It's not these people thinking for themselves. It's just these people enraptured with Donald Trump, this larger-than-life figure who presents himself as though he were Jesus. They just can't resist his charisma, and they treat him as their icon. They worship him. They will do whatever he says. If he calls for violence, they'll be right out in the streets enacting political violence, despite the fact that they have never done that, and that is actually the left's thing that they plan and that they tell us about and that they promote. And then even people like the fake Vice President Kamala Harris promote their bail funds to get them out of jail, get them right back on the streets to further destabilize society. So Donald Trump's supporters are a cult. Now, we talked a lot about this last year when we were in the midst of the disastrous Ron DeSantis campaign or op. Could be kayfabe, guys. Could be kayfabe. Probably not. Almost definitely not. Almost definitely never was. But hey, tiny possibility, little sliver in there. Maybe it was worth it for some of us to actually pay attention to that while we were being told, oh, it's all kayfabe. Don't be divisive. It's kayfabe. It's just an op. Just ignore it. They're probably just fine. Well, the same people are still doing the same things. And we Trump supporters, people in the America First movement, are still being framed as cult members by these very same people. That was an attack point for the Ron DeSantis campaign, and it still is. But as I said back then, Trump supporters clearly are not a cult. No one was less likely to get, for instance, the COVID vaccine than Trump supporters were, while at the same time, Ron DeSantis supporters were claiming that Donald Trump is responsible for that COVID vaccine. We get a new wave of that up every few months, and we have not heard the last of it, not by a long shot. Donald Trump supporters have absolutely no qualms disagreeing with Donald Trump. It happens all the time, and often Trump listens to the people as they push him in a new direction. That's how it's supposed to go. He is supposed to be there as a representative of the nation's people as a whole. which means that if they say, hey, that's not the right thing, he should be adjusting. And that's exactly what happens. MAGA is not a cult. But on the flip side, those supporters of the uniparty in the regime, the Trump deranged, the anti-Trump, anti-MAGA, anti-America first people, like the fake president, for instance, and all of his voters, including the Ron DeSantis people, by the way, who attest to Joe Biden's legitimacy, they actually are in a hate movement. They have inadvertently walked themselves into a hate movement. I've been talking about this for a very long time. And I was thinking this morning, in all of this context, that a hate movement is essentially the inversion within the false reality of a cult. Now, in a hate movement, obviously, the object on which the movement's attention is focused is an avatar of their hatred. Whereas in a cult, they exhibit all the same behaviors, but the object is an object of worship. And it's funny because they will say, we're not in a hate movement. We don't hate these people. They're just really bad people. They believe terrible things. They are ignorant. They are bigots, blah, blah, blah. Now, they don't know any of those people, which is ignorant. And to judge those people and group them together like that, to view them in that collectivist manner, and then ascribe to all of them the same negative characteristics, that's bigotry. They use the cancel culture against anyone who disagrees with them. If people from inside their group express any amount of support for those outside their group, namely Trump supporters, they are ejected from the group. It bears all the characteristics of a cult, but the object of their focus is not an object of worship. It is an object of scorn and hatred. And that is why so often you will hear them making the worst cases for any one of their viewpoints. But it always comes down to the fact that Donald Trump just is bad based on how they've branded and defined him, and so are his supporters. Therefore, all of them are wrong. And of course, their motivations are things like anti-Semitism. It's not that they have their own understanding of scripture, which may well be an accurate one. It's that they are anti-Semitic. They hate Jews. They are Christian nationalists, and they're going to cost us an election where we have no reason to believe the votes are even accurately recorded and counted. It makes absolutely no sense, except understanding this as part of the same controlled opposition dynamic at work that we see in the mainstream media, that we see in the quote-unquote alternative mainstream media, like The Daily Wire, and both sides of wannabe elitist uniparty supporters around the intellectual kids table. That's where all the smart conversations have. They can maintain respect for one another, knowing that on all the issues where they have to align with the uniparty, they all do. Anytime their loyalty is questioned, they can just say some terrible things about Trump supporters, call them stupid, ignorant, say they're in a cult, whatever. And that wins back the good graces of the very serious intellectuals and all of the people out there who apparently still need to listen to these morons in order to figure out who has the wee-wees and who has the hoo-haws. Now, once they've got the team set and they've created this divide over religious beliefs, while ostensibly protecting the religious beliefs of one group who they identify as somehow an oppressed minority class, well, then they get to use that division and all the conflict it creates and all the bad feelings it creates, the urge for everyone who witnesses it to disassociate with it completely, that's going to be what decides elections this fall. And today we got the sort of headline that you should expect to read many times over the course of the next 7 months. This is from the Daily Mail. Biden campaign eyes victory in Florida in 2024 by making it ground zero for abortion rights. Democrats plan to go to war over reproductive rights in Trump's home state, parentheses, that DeSantis also won by 20 points. Now, we've talked about this many times. Donald Trump secured more votes in the 2020 election than DeSantis did for governor in 2022 by a long shot. Now, people say That was a national presidential election. Of course he's going to get more votes in that election. Really? Okay. Well, I guess that makes sense on some level if you don't need to do things like, let's say, think about it. Ron DeSantis was being called America's governor. He was being widely publicized as a hero by Fox News, widely publicized as a villain by MSNBC and CNN, which works perfectly in their controlled opposition dynamic to elevate him as the central figure. That is why they have the two sides argue over him. It's not about what they're saying about him. It's about both of them making it clear to their audiences that this is the guy. This is the important guy. He is going to be the Republican that replaces and supplants Donald Trump, and he is going to be the arch nemesis of all these Democrats and Joe Biden. And he is this anti-woke crusader. Oh, he's crushed Disney in Florida is where woke goes to die, even though woke is totally still thriving in Florida, as is the uniparty regime's agenda. In 2022, with the fake Biden administration and the policies of the uniparty tearing the country apart, Florida Republicans, who, by the way, we're also told have increased in number by hundreds of thousands based on Ron's good governance and moving from California. Oh, yeah, same excuse Democrats use. We are told that they had so many more Republicans just coming there for Ron. How did all those people just stay home in an election that important? And why didn't the Democrat Party put up a real candidate instead of former Republican governor of Florida, Charlie Crist? They gave DeSantis the Washington generals of political opponents, someone who no one really likes, with no particular talent, just another tool of the uniparty machine. And then he got absolutely run over. Exactly the same model that we saw in Virginia in 2021 when Glenn Youngkin got to run against washed up Democrat has been and former Clinton hack Terry McAuliffe. We're told that Florida's elections are very safe and very secure, a gold standard for the nation, but that's not true. No one believes Virginia has legitimate elections. And now we're being told that the Democrats think they might be able to win Florida based on the abortion issue. Democrats are eyeing Florida as a state they can make gains in, as it is on the verge of having one of the strictest abortion bans in the country, and abortion rights will be directly on the ballot there in November. The Florida Supreme Court upheld the state's 15-week abortion ban on Monday and paved the way for a 6-week ban to go into effect in 30 days. 6 weeks is often before a woman knows she is pregnant. Now, we've talked about this plenty of times on this show. If there is a 6-week ban, all we need to do to solve that little problem is encourage regular monthly pregnancy testing. Now, is that an ideal solution? Maybe not, but it is better than killing a fetus after 6 weeks, or, you know, at all. But let's get back to the Daily Mail. The ruling was met with outrage by Democrats and abortion rights activists in the state and nationally, but it could also be an energizing issue going into the November election. President Biden called the decision outrageous on Tuesday. Yesterday's extreme decision puts desperately needed medical care even further out of reach for millions of women in Florida and across the South, the president said in a statement. Actually, the decision doesn't do anything about women who aren't in Florida. This decision means that millions of women in Florida and across the Southeast will likely live in an even more cruel reality where they face a choice between putting their lives at risk or traveling hundreds or thousands of miles to get care, said Vice President Kamala Harris, who has taken a leading role on reproductive rights in the administration. But here's the kicker. At the same time, Florida's highest court is letting Floridians have their say by allowing a measure on abortion access to be on the ballot in November. Following the monumental decision, President Biden's campaign manager released a memo with the subject line, "President Biden's opening in Florida." As we've seen in election after election, protecting abortion rights is mobilizing a diverse and growing segment of voters to help buoy Democrats up and down the ballot, Julie Chavez Rodriguez wrote. And of course, countless uniparty leftists weighed in, backing up that same opinion. In November, Florida voters will stand up for women's freedom to make their most personal medical decisions by rejecting this abortion ban and firing Rick Scott from the Senate, said Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee spokesperson Maeve Coyle of the state's Republican senator. So they're going to get the abortion thing, they're going to get Biden a win in Florida, and they're going to get rid of Rick Scott, all because of this one abortion decision. Isn't that incredible? The fact that abortion is going on the ballot as a ballot measure, that's going to bring out all of the voters who are going to reject the Republican Party and their agenda in Florida. That is really going to happen in 2024 because of this abortion decision. Florida is in play and it's worth fighting for, wrote state Democratic Senator Chevron Jones. That's right. Florida is in play, wrote Nikki Fried, the Democratic State Party chairwoman and last Democrat to hold statewide elected office. She's the new star that the Democrat Party cares about, but they didn't run her against Ron. Weird, huh? Don't give up on Florida. We can win this, wrote March for Our Lives founder David Hogg. Florida just got a lot more expensive for the GOP, wrote political strategist and former Republican Party member Rick Wilson. That's Rick Wilson of the Lincoln Project. Florida just got a lot more expensive for the GOP. Oh, well, what a weird way to think about the will of the Florida voters. And you might be thinking, well, that's not Ron DeSantis' fault. The courts made these decisions. And I know you say Florida has election fraud, but it's hard to believe that Florida has election fraud. What with America's governor winning by 20 points down there, despite being obviously nowhere near as popular as Donald Trump in Florida. And that is a fact that you can support in numerous ways. Donald Trump is far more popular than Ron DeSantis everywhere. The fake primary just proved that. Ron is a non-entity now. His career may well be over, and one of us, at least, said that back in November 2022, while everyone else was saying that people like that guy, oh yeah, that's me, were divisive. You might think even if the commies wanted to steal Florida, Ron DeSantis is not going to allow that to happen because he wouldn't tolerate election fraud and election theft in Florida. I mean, he did so much about the 2020 election, didn't he? I mean, didn't he? Oh no, he didn't. He didn't do anything at all. In fact, he barely talked about it. And then during his fake campaign, he said again and again that Joe Biden was definitely the legitimate president. But here's Newsweek from yesterday. Florida Supreme Court abortion ruling divides DeSantis justices. The Florida Supreme Court sided with abortion rights advocates on Monday, giving the green light for a ballot initiative to move forward. That, if passed, would amend the state's constitution to protect abortion access. The 4-3 ruling, however, split appointees of Governor Ron DeSantis. Two justices appointed by DeSantis, Chief Justice Carlos Muniz and Justice John Curiel, sided with the majority, which wrote in its opinion that the proposed ballot measure complied with state law. Three of DeSantis's appointees dissented. The initiative, backed by a coalition of reproductive rights groups, seeks to enshrine abortion protections in Florida's constitution and allow the procedure to remain available until the fetus can generally survive outside the uterus, a stage reached at around 24 weeks of pregnancy. So, 6 months into pregnancy, they still want to be able to perform abortions in Florida. 6 months. Monday's decision by Florida's high court also upheld the state's abortion law, which bans the procedure after 15 weeks of pregnancy. The decision allows a 6-week abortion ban, which was signed by DeSantis last year, to take effect next month. If the ballot initiative passes with 60% of the vote in November, however, both the 15-week and 6-week bans would be overturned. Muniz wrote in the majority opinion on Monday that the decision to allow the measure to head to the ballot in November was based on the, quote, constitutional principle that all political power is inherent in the people, end quote. The proposed amendment would constitutionalize restrictions on the people's authority to use law to protect an entire class of human beings from private harm, the Chief Justice wrote. It would cast into doubt the people's authority even to enact protections that are prudent, compassionate, and mindful of the complexities involved. Under our system of government, it is up to the voters, not this court, to decide whether such a rule is consistent with the deepest commitments of our political community. And that might be fine in principle if we had legitimate elections. But we don't. And so what we have is an inherently abusive process, which the ballot measures are. If you have questions about whether or not ballot measures are a good thing, look no further than California. Ballot measures in a world of rigged and stolen elections means that the regime can accomplish whatever it wants using ballot measures with no accountability on any of the regime politicians in government. They don't even have to do anything as long as enough ballot measures get put on the ballot. Then they simply need to make the issues controversial enough in the public consciousness to convince people that a great number of their fellow citizens really went out to cast their vote on whatever issue is being debated. Dissenting judges argued that the language of the proposed amendment was not explicit enough to appear on November's ballot. Justice Jamie Grosans, appointed to the bench by DeSantis in 2020, wrote in her opinion that while Floridians, quote, have the right to amend their constitution, there are constitutional and statutory requirements that must be satisfied in order for an amendment to reach the ballot. Holding a sponsor to those requirements is far from what the majority characterizes as a stranglehold on the amendment process, she continued. Consequently, I find the ballot summary conclusively defective for failing to inform the voter of the material legal effects of the amendment, including the substantial effect this amendment could have on Article 1, Section 2 of our Constitution. So on one side, there are substantive issues about this ballot measure not properly conforming to the requirements. And on the other side, there is the generalized notion that all politics should be of, by, and for the people, which is true, except if you have stolen elections, and then it's not true at all. Then it's just a justification for allowing non-conforming ballot measures to be put on the ballot in an attempt to supply convincing narratives to not only get the abortion laws in Florida overturned so that they have 6 months to abort fetuses, but also defeat Rick Scott in Florida and defeat Donald Trump in Florida. And things are going so poorly for the communists and for the Uniparty in general in the quote-unquote swing states that they need to open up new possibilities. And it sounds like they're targeting Ron DeSantis' state as the one where they can make up all that ground. How could Ron allow this? It's like he's just not who they said he was. This is from the Center for Immigration Studies by Todd Benzman, who is as informed and as committed to illustrating for the country the true problem at the border as anyone. He is not a Ron DeSantis hater, and he is not writing this in service of Donald Trump and against Ron DeSantis. The headline of the article, The Florida Gateway. Data shows most migrant flights landing in Governor DeSantis's Sunshine State. President Joe Biden's Department of Homeland Security refuses to publicly identify the dozens of U.S. international airports for which it has approved direct flights from abroad for certain inadmissible aliens. And this story broke a few weeks ago. Also, Todd Benzman, illegal aliens from all over the world were being flown directly into the United States of America and released as part of this global migration program, which is actually a global slave trade, the same one that has been running for centuries now by the same Prussians. At least 386,000 migrants, through February, have been allowed to fly to interior U.S. airports as part of a legally dubious admissions program the fake administration launched in October 2022. And that's me saying fake, obviously. The rationale for the program is to, quote, reduce the number of individuals crossing unlawfully, end quote, over the southern border by flying them over it directly into the interior and then releasing them on parole. But a Center for Immigration Studies analysis of available public information on U.S. Customs and Border Protection's website filtered to see Office of Field Operations Airport Customs Officer encounters with the nationalities chosen to receive this benefit points out the airports that might account for most of the landings from abroad, if not necessarily the final destinations. So this is where they are initially flown into the country, avoiding the process that used to occur, which is they are flown somewhere into Central or South America, and then they make the trip up eventually through New Mexico to cross the southern border. Now they're just skipping that part. This early evidence suggests that a great many of these inadmissible alien passengers, probably a majority, initially land at international airports in Republican Governor Ron DeSantis' Florida. In fact, Florida turns out to be the top landing and U.S. Customs processing zone for this direct flights parole and release program, tallying at nearly 326,000 of the initial arrivals from inception through February. Now, hey, maybe this too is kayfabe. Maybe Ron DeSantis is playing his role exactly as intended. And if that's the case, well, hey, maybe when all of this is said and done, I will owe Ron DeSantis an apology. I will not owe his supporters an apology because they're awful. They were all critical foot soldiers in directing the hate movement toward MAGA and trying to get as many MAGA-friendly conservatives as possible to turn on Donald Trump and instead go to Ron DeSantis and the GOP establishment. Very few of these Ron DeSantis simps were worse than a man named John Cardillo. He, on X, formerly Twitter, quote tweeted a response to a March 17th post that said, the best social media operation the Democrats are running right now is convincing DeSantis voters that handing the election to Biden makes them good, honest, principled conservatives. That is the same point that Ron DeSantis's supporters were making throughout his 15-month disaster of a campaign that they will tell you only lasted 8 months because, of course, they ran a shadow campaign pretending not to actually be campaigning but still attacking Trump and his supporters for 7 months prior. Cardillo responded, it's not the Democrats, it's MAGA influencers attacking, harassing, doxing, and telling people their vote isn't wanted or needed and they'll never be welcomed back. Well, hey, John Cardillo, let me be the one to break it to you. Or, you know, break it to you again, because I definitely told you directly 18 months ago, you won't be welcomed back. You lied about Joe Biden's legitimacy and the fact that the country had been usurped. You suggested that someone other than the rightful winner of the 2020 election should be the quote-unquote Republican nominee in this fake election. You helped the global regime and the uniparty representation in the United States to remove Donald Trump from the picture. That was your goal the entire time. Now, if all of them are a red team op, designed to expose the GOP establishment, and they are all actually pro-Trump, and it's all a kayfabe operation, well, hey, I guess maybe I'll owe John Cardillo an apology one day, except that I won't, because he's really awful. He is actually terrible online to real Trump supporters, just normal American citizens who support Donald Trump and don't support stolen elections and people who would go along with them. Of course you won't be welcomed back. You have betrayed the country and everyone in the political party you pretend to represent. That's not something everyone's just going to be okay with. And here's the thing. We don't want or need your votes. Go ahead and vote for Joe Biden. Who cares? Vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. If we have legitimate elections, Donald Trump will win no matter what. If we don't have legitimate elections, then it doesn't matter what the TV tells us the American people chose when they went and cast their votes that weren't properly counted. We don't need you. We don't want you. You will not be accepted back. You were told by everyone a year and a half ago that the thing you were pursuing would yield these results. And none of them listened because they were all incentivized by the uniparty regime. And who is supporting the GOP establishment? All of these GOP donors on the uniparty right. Seems like the same people who are aligned with the Daily Wire and Fox News. It's people who were happy to see Donald Trump removed from the picture, or so they thought, in 2020 through a stolen election. It served their interests, so they just backed off. They said, well, you know, all elections are a little bit stolen, and if they can't find enough hard evidence to get these courts to overturn the illegitimately certified results that are now being protected with the very violent insurrection narrative, well, I guess that means that there was no election fraud. All of these people had the opportunity to stand up for their country, and instead they took the incentives and avoided the punishments and simply lied. And if you want to come to their defense and say maybe they didn't lie, well, then you're left with they're just morons, which might even be worse. Ask them if they believe Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. And they will probably say no, they don't believe it, because they know that continuing to say yes is going to embarrass them even in front of their audience of standard issue uniparty right villagers. It's just no longer okay or acceptable to pretend that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes, not even for the Daily Wire guys. So now they give you a different story. Well, you know, I wouldn't say that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes, but we don't know what the number was. And Chris Krebs said it was the safest and most secure election ever. The courts didn't side with Donald Trump. So what are we supposed to do? We have to preserve our society. We have to preserve our institutions. Are you threatening violence? Are you threatening to tear down our very democracy? That is what we got from the Daily Wire. Who are these people going to convince this time around? Their pro-Ron strategy was to attack Trump supporters. That failed spectacularly. Ron DeSantis is not a good politician. He's not a good campaigner. He's not a good governor. He is just serving the uniparty rights side of the controlled opposition dynamic and pressing their agenda forward for public show, while at the same time allowing the uniparty left to accomplish everything it needs. And while totally avoiding, for 3.5 years now, virtually any attempt to work toward election integrity in Florida. He commissioned a state board that answers to him. They are going to study all the election fraud, and then they're going to give Ron the answer. Hey, Ron, everything was okay again. Thumbs up. Yeah, I guess the abortion law got overturned and Rick Scott lost, and now Joe Biden's president. But our election board has found, thankfully, that everything's all good. Sooner or later, people really, really have to understand what this uniparty is doing and what the controlled opposition dynamic really looks like and what it means. And unfortunately, that means that many Republicans, especially traditional Republicans, are going to have to let go of a few of their favorite characters in all of this. It's worth noting, by the way, that after Miami, in the number one position in terms of these illegal aliens flying directly into the United States, the next city up is Houston in Governor Greg Abbott's Texas. And in fifth place is Atlanta in Governor Brian Kemp's Georgia. Those were the three Republican governors who, quote unquote, won so big in 2022. Now, moving on from uniparty right Trump deranged shills, but sticking with the problem of illegal aliens, there was a very interesting post by Wall Street Apes yesterday. I'm not sure who the man in this video is, but I think he may go by the older millennial.
Y'all want to come with me down another rabbit hole of how the U.S. government is using private industry to fuck over the American people? This is going to be a quick video, but I wanted to put it out because I want to hear what people think. The basic gist is that the United States government is using BlackRock to permanently house all the illegal immigrants they've been letting in. So you know how companies like BlackRock have been buying up large amounts of the single-family real estate? And a shitload of the properties that they bought are in the state of New York. And New York just declared that they're going to pay homeowners there $125 a day to house a migrant. $125 a day per migrant, per bedroom. That means the taxpayers of New York are going to be paying $3,750 per migrant per month. Now think about all those houses that BlackRock bought. Let's say they got a four bedroom. That means they can house four migrants. And at $3,750 per migrant, that means that property would now be bringing in $15,000 a month. And if any of those migrants have a family, that's additional money on top. And BlackRock doesn't have to worry because the money's guaranteed by the government of New York. I mean, you have to think, so far in Biden's presidency, anywhere from 12 to 15 million illegals have crossed over. And then because of all the incentive programs that New York created, if you enter this country illegally, you'd have to be stupid not to go to New York. You're going to get paid. You're going to get fed. You're going to get housed, all for the price of either a bus trip up there, or maybe you can catch one of those flights that Biden's been sending under everyone's radar. But regardless, you're going to go to New York, where BlackRock owns thousands of homes. And I'd be willing to bet a lot of those homes are about to have an illegal immigrant as a tenant. And they're going to make sure they get at least one in every bedroom. And I would expect that this continues at least until the census.
Now, to avoid being accused of spreading dangerous disinformation and conspiracy theories, I will tell you that BlackRock, on their website, says they are not investing in single-family homes. They are not the ones buying up all these single-family homes. They have a page with the heading, BlackRock and Housing Setting the Record Straight. They say recently BlackRock has been the subject of speculation, misperception, and even mistaken identity in media reports and on social media regarding our role in the U.S. housing market. We want to make it perfectly clear, BlackRock is not buying individual houses in the U.S. A number of other large asset managers and private equity firms are very active today in purchasing single-family residences. BlackRock is sometimes confused with them. As a fiduciary asset manager, we invest and manage capital on behalf of our clients in a vast array of public and private U.S. real estate markets. But buying individual homes is not one of them. Below are facts on how we do participate in the real estate market. Combined, we are investing approximately $120 billion in the U.S. residential real estate market on behalf of our clients. And they detail what they're doing. Providing capital for mortgages to help American families buy new homes. BlackRock is a significant investor in mortgage securities, helping make capital available to individuals and families seeking to purchase homes. Also, providing capital for new housing construction. BlackRock has invested in several programs that are providing financing to build new homes and add to U.S. housing supply. Most recently, we began investing in new construction, purpose-built, for-rent housing developments that add supply to the market and address the increasing demand we see for this property type. Our focus is on building single-family rental housing that can be managed and operated similar to multifamily properties with dedicated property management, leasing, and amenities. And if you have attempted to rent a house in the last few years, you'll be very familiar with this. There are all sorts of new tech-forward rental companies, rental management companies that control all of these homes. And interestingly and unsurprisingly, in these homes, they have things like Ring doorbells with little cameras there so they can see you when you come home and keep an eye on the other side of the street 24 hours a day. Inside, they have those Nest thermostats, those whole home controls that can be remotely accessed and turned off. You have your air conditioning up too high? Well, they're going to turn it right back down for you. If they decide that the grid is being strained, well, they'll just disable your temperature controls for a while. It's going to be the temperature they choose. They say BlackRock also invests in multifamily properties, apartment complexes, and other residential real estate. Bottom line, BlackRock is an active investor in the U.S. real estate market, but we are not among the institutional investors buying single-family homes. Right beneath that on the page, they have a little box that says download the Buying Houses Facts PDF. If you click it, you'll get to a dead page. So apparently they don't want those facts up there anymore. Okay, so BlackRock is not going out and buying up all the homes that American families are selling. They're not purchasing these individual homes. What they're doing is investing and then building these new developments. They're essentially just creating new suburbs around small but growing towns all across America. The houses are totally cookie cutter. They look very modern. They have tech features if you are into that sort of thing. If you are proudly marching into our techno dystopia, you'll love it. But the houses are nothing special. Now imagine how good an investment that would be if you knew that you could fill those houses with quote-unquote renters who will give you $15,000 a month. Now, unless you're in a major metropolitan area, these houses wouldn't go for anywhere close to $15,000 a month. They would go for somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 a month. So that is an absolutely spectacular investment to make $144,000 a year in rental profit directly from the government with guaranteed renters full time. Now, this video was the first I've heard of this issue, and the idea is that it stems from the problems New York is having with housing all of the illegal aliens that are being sent to New York as part of this global slave trade. And there have also been disputes about their right to shelter laws. So I don't know how accurate this man's description of the problem is, but from a business perspective on the BlackRock side, and from a uniparty political perspective, you can see how this sort of thing would be true and could be heavily incentivized. The craziest part is that New York would actually be saving money, considering last year the New York Post reported that New York City was spending as much as $387 per migrant each day. And here's the thing. It might get confusing because all of those members of the uniparty right, the GOP establishment and elite, the Con Inc. media, they'll be agreeing that this whole program is very wrong. These illegal aliens are benefiting, these big businesses are benefiting, and all on the backs of actual American workers who are paying taxes. They'll be very upset about this. They will recognize this as something wrong, and they will tell you that you are right this time. Look at that. Our interests align. Therefore, they are our allies right now. But then you remember, wait a second. These guys were the people who convinced standard issue villagers who voted for Trump that the election actually was legitimate. So whose fault is all this anyway? I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm Your Moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/imyourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon, down on the range. It's happening!